A little fun before finals week. I expected I would have to invite all the guests, but Wavy invited some math nerd classmates and a few co-workers from the hospital where she did insurance billing. She also cooked a mountain of food and went around the party encouraging people to eat. That was how she showed affection. When I went through some soul-crushing breakup, she made elaborate meals and desserts for me. She invited a custodian from the hospital, Darren, who turned out to be really nice. He said, "I was worried about coming, because she's never said a word to me. But the invitation said there was food, so I figured why not?" I wondered if Wavy liked him. Liked him. He had a baby face, and he was nowhere near the size of Kellen, but he was big-boned, so maybe she was thinking of fattening him up. Except I spent all night talking to Darren, and she didn't seem to mind. Even when we went out on the second-floor balcony to smoke a joint and make out. The bubbly butterfly strikes again. When I came back inside, Wavy was talking to Joshua from my philosophy class. I'd invited him because he had a totally hot George Michael 5 o'clock shadow, but there I was flirting with Darren, and she was flirting with my date. Okay, it would be a stretch to describe what Wavy was doing as flirting. She was sitting on the couch, almost close enough to touch Joshua, with a pleasant, "yes, I'm listening" expression on her face. I had this proud mom feeling. She was coming out of her shell. She was blooming. A couple of days after the party, I was sprawled out on the couch, kind of watching TV and kind of working on my final essay for my women's studies class. It was the last assignment I had to turn in for the semester. Somebody knocked on the front door, and when I answered it, Joshua stood out in the hallway. Finals had cost me enough sleep I thought I might be hallucinating. Perfect 5 o'clock shadow, dreamy blue eyes, cologne, crisp white button-down shirt. "Hey, is Wavy home?" he said. He was real. I stood there like an idiot for a minute, while my brain tried to come up with a reason that Joshua would be standing at our door asking for Wavy. How did he even know her name? Had she actually introduced herself to him at the party? "Sure. Come in." I parked him on the couch next to my essay writing mess and went to get Wavy. She was in her room, typing, with her Spanish dictionary open on the desk. I think she had a Spanish lit essay and some kind of quantum mechanics final left. "Joshua's here to see you," I said. Wavy shook her head and waved her hands at me in baffled horror. Under stress, she still defaulted to silence. While I waited to see what she would do, I had several unkind thoughts. If Joshua was attracted to fragile, ethereal Wavy, I'd never stood a chance with him. The nicest things I've been called are exuberant and earthy. Anyway, I was the one who invited him to the party. Where did he get off coming around to see my roommate? "Not here," she finally said. "Too late. I already told him you were here." I stood there, enjoying the panicked look on her face until I really thought about Wavy for a minute. Kellen was serving a 10-year sentence. What was she going to do, wait for him? He was never going to be not too old for her, and now he was a convicted felon. She needed to move on with her life. "What could it hurt to talk to Joshua?" I said. "He's nice. He's funny. Plus he's gorgeous. Seriously, have you looked at him? He's like a pre-med Adonis." Wavy made the face that meant, "Do you know what it's like being me?" I honestly didn't want to know, because she was pretty fucked up. I liked to play at tragedy, but she drank it out of her baby bottle. "Just go talk to him," I said. "I'll save you if it gets too awkward." Wavy stood up, and I thought she was going out to the living room. Instead, she walked over and shut her bedroom door in my face. 6. Wavy. I closed the door, but Renee opened it back up. We glared at each other until she said, "You're a coward, Wavonna Lee Quinn." I didn't fall for that trick in 6th grade. I wasn't going to now. I flipped Renee off and tried to close the door, but she held her ground. "Pot calling kettle," I said. "That is such bullshit. Show me one time I was a coward." Renee thought recklessness was the same thing as bravery. I stepped past her into the hall and walked toward the kitchen. She came after me. In the front room, we passed Joshua, who looked confused. Not a Kellen kind of confused, where he always worried he'd misunderstood or done or said something wrong. Joshua thought someone else had made a mistake. I stopped in front of the refrigerator, and Renee was under such a head of steam that she bumped into my back. At the party, she had written Darren's phone number on a napkin and said, "Yeah, I'd love to go out with you." The napkin was still stuck to the fridge. She hadn't called him. He wasn't her type. Not good-looking enough and probably too nice to break her heart. "Are you seriously going to wait for a guy you haven't seen since you were 14? How do you know he even still wants you?" she said. I jerked Darren's number off the fridge, sending the magnet flying. When I pinned the napkin to Renee's chest with my forefinger, she made a surprised little O with her mouth. "Coward," I said. She smirked. "Tell you what, I'll call him after you talk to Joshua, and you have to try, Wavy. You can't sit there like a stone until he gives up. You have to try or it doesn't count." Renee knew me. When I let go of the napkin, she stuck it back on the fridge. I walked into the living room feeling nauseated, not because I was nervous about talking to Joshua, but because my stomach was full of the poison of Renee saying, "How do you know he even still wants you?" How did I know? "Is something wrong?" Joshua stood up from the couch. "No." I took a deep breath and sat down on one end of the couch. Joshua sat down in the middle, closer than I liked. "I was in the neighborhood and thought I'd drop by, since I didn't have your phone number," he said. "Hey, I'm gonna go downstairs and get the mail," Renee said. On her way to the front door, she gave me a warning look. "So, Wavy, I think your name is so cool. Kind of hippie, but not in a goofy way. Not like Moon Unit," Joshua said once we were alone. What was I supposed to say to that? "I'm glad you like my name. The man I love gave it to me." That probably wasn't what Renee meant when she said I had to try. That was me being impossible. Aunt Brenda said that about me. "You're impossible." Most days I was impossible. Like a unicorn. "Short for Wavana," I said.
"Really?"
I never met anyone with either of those names, so that's pretty cool. I mean, I have a pretty common name, so it's neat to meet people who have unusual names. Joshua's teeth were perfect. He must have had braces. Renee talked about him like he was a statue. David standing naked in a museum in Italy. I thought he was more like a mannequin in a department store. He smelled like a mannequin, too. Soap, deodorant, cologne, mouthwash. How was I supposed to tell what he smelled like under all of that?
"So what's your major?" he said.
"Astrophysics." I didn't want him to panic, but as soon as I said it, his eyes got bigger.
"Oh, wow. So, what do you do with a degree in astrophysics?"
"Become an astrophysicist." Joshua stared at me. I was being impossible again, saying things he didn't know how to respond to. "Serial conversation killer," Renee called me. When she came back with the mail, I expected her to give me an accusatory look, since Joshua and I were sitting there in silence. Instead, she slammed the front door and practically ran across the room to the kitchen. "Wavy, will you come in here?" she called. 7. Renee. I went down to get the mail to give Joshua and Wavy a chance to talk in private. She did need to get on with her life. Then I saw what was in the mailbox. A pizza coupon flyer and one of those familiar heartbreaking envelopes. A fancy envelope addressed to Jesse Joe Barfoot Jr., inmate number 451197, stamped "Unauthorized Correspondence" in big red letters. Except this one wasn't. This envelope had a big red stamp that said, "Released." A less romantic person might have taken a more measured approach. Me, I thought, screw moving on. This is true love. Clutching the mail in one hand and my boobs in the other, I ran up both flights of stairs. I put the envelope down in the middle of the kitchen table, and when Wavy walked in, I was staring at it in disbelief. She picked up the letter and her hands started to shake.
I can only imagine what was going on inside her head, because my brain was lit up like the Vegas Strip.
Does that mean he's been paroled? Don't they have to notify you?
If he's out, why hasn't he come to see you? I said.
Oh, right. If he hadn't been getting her letters, he wouldn't know our address. It wasn't like he could drop by her aunt's house and say, "Hey, where's Wavy?"
How is he going to find her?
He wasn't. We were going to find him.
At last, I wasn't just a fat college girl watching a soap opera. I was part of the drama. I was going to rewrite the third act and change it from tragedy to happily ever after. While Wavy sat there in shock, the envelope pressed between both her hands, I picked up the phone and started making calls, all of them long distance and out of state. I wondered what Mrs. Brenda Newling would say when Wavy's phone bill hit triple digits.
"Hey, what's up?" Joshua said.
He stood in the doorway, looking unbelievably sexy.
"Give us a couple minutes, okay?"
I was on hold with someone at the office where they kept the records for the state's sex offender registry. A thing I hadn't even known existed, until somebody at the Department of Corrections transferred me there.
"Is she okay?"
He was looking at Wavy, who seemed a little shaky.
"She's had some news."
"Ma'am?" Someone came back on the other end of the phone line. "Do you have the offender's full legal name?"
"Jesse Joe Barfoot, Jr."
"I don't know what the process is.
One moment, please."
Wavy looked at me expectantly. The woman came back on the line and read me a street address, apartment number, and city. Wellburg, which was across the state line, less than 3 hours away. I wrote it down on the back of the pizza flyer, and as soon as Wavy saw it, she jumped up from the table and brushed past Joshua in the doorway. I knew exactly where she was going, to get ready for her reunion with Kellen.
"So, do you think I have a chance with Wavy?"
Joshua shot me a panty-melting grin. For a few seconds, a whole scenario played out in my mind. After I broke the bad news to him about Wavy's fiancé being paroled, I would usher him into my bedroom. Wavy could drive herself to Wellburg. Meanwhile, I would comfort Joshua, listening sympathetically while I arranged myself on my bed in a flattering pose. I would make him feel sexy and smart and funny. That's exactly what I was imagining. I would get him in my room and seduce him, thereby accomplishing the whole point of me inviting him to the party in the first place. He really was amazingly good-looking. It wouldn't be a hardship to fall into bed with him, but what kind of lies would I have to tell myself to pretend I wasn't a second-choice rebound?
"The thing is," I said, "Wavy has a lot of baggage, like a 9-piece matched set of hard-sided Samsonite. The girl is so far..."
For the first time in my life, I stopped. It wasn't my story to tell.
"What? Help me here," Joshua said, even though I wasn't going to kiss his boo-boo and make it better.
I yanked the Band-Aid off. "Wavy's engaged. She's going to see her fiancé as soon as she gets out of the shower." I would have needed new clothes and hours to get ready. Wavy showered, fluffed her wispy hair, and put on her favorite dress. It was gray with thin white stripes in it, worn to limp softness. She hadn't seen him in almost 7 years, and that's what she was wearing. On the drive, we made a plan. Or I made a plan, anyway. I would drop Wavy off at Kellen's house, and then I would go to the library at Wellburg College and work on my women's studies essay. That way my evening wouldn't be a total waste, and Wavy could check in with me before I drove home. By the time we got to Wellburg, it was late afternoon, and it had started to rain. We circled Kellen's address and then parked half a block back where we could see the front door to the apartment building, which was a run-down brick tenement. It faced onto what was basically an alley, with garbage dumpsters on the sidewalks. Would Wavy want to live with him in that dismal place? It hadn't occurred to me that I was orchestrating the end of us being roommates. I'd been going along thinking I was Shakespeare, but I'd written myself out of the play. I was staring out at the rain, feeling sorry for myself, when this big old truck drove past and parked at the end of the block. 1969 Ford F-250, Wavy said. She was weird that way. She always knew the years of cars. The man who got out of the truck wore blue work pants and a blue and white striped shirt like a uniform. Reaching back into the truck cab, he pulled out a baseball bat. He ducked his head against the rain, but he didn't run for cover. Walking up the block slowly, he looked around, but he didn't see us watching him.
8. Wavy. Kellen had lost weight. Of course, they hadn't fed him well in prison, but I could make all his favorite foods and fix that. Seeing him free, my heart jumped in my chest. Not empty, not burning. Alive. "Oh my God, that's him? That's him," Renee said. "What are you going to do?" I opened the car door, but she grabbed the sleeve of my raincoat. "Wait, should I wait for you? What should I do?" "I don't know." My heart was moving too far ahead to think about that. "Well, I'll be at the library. Just let me know everything's okay." Kellen was already through the apartment building door. I ran across the street, splashing through puddles, and my hand shook on the door handle. I was all the things I'd almost forgotten how to be. Nervous, excited, happy. I wanted to run up the stairs, but my legs could only manage one step at a time. There was no doorbell, no peephole. I knocked and Kellen answered. Water dripped out of his starling wing hair. Embroidered over the pocket of his wet uniform shirt, Jesse Joe. 3 buttons undone, showing the tops of the arrows and the calumet on his chest.
"Wavy," he said.
I didn't know what to say. I hadn't thought about that at all. Did I have to say anything? I never had before. I took a step forward, wanting to be in the same room with him, to breathe his air. His eyes weren't soft. They were hot and frightened. He was afraid of me. I was afraid of me. Sunlight broke through the clouds and rain stopped pounding against the windows. Kellen's breath hitched. Anything could happen. Everything. I pressed against him, smelling him. His sweat.
"Wavy, you can't be here."
I tried to will him to kiss me the way I used to, but he frowned down at me with his mouth closed. I turned my back on him, and a spiraling hot thing in my chest said, "Leave." Behind me was the kitchen table. Grabbing the closest chair, I carried it to Kellen and stepped up. Then I was the giant, towering over him. I took his face in my hands the way he did on the morning I knew he loved me. I lifted his mouth to mine. Would he resist? No. He opened his lips and I knew Val had been right. People could get into you that way. I was creeping into Kellen. He wanted me to. He kissed me, but he wouldn't touch me, so I took off the raincoat. I unbuttoned the dress myself and dropped it to my feet. The slip, all slippery silk, whispered off me. The panties, which I wanted him to ease down the way he had the first time. The last time. This time, my hands did it. My hands for his hands. Freeing his mouth for a moment, I looked into his eyes to see if he would come to me. "Kellen," I said.
"Are you real?"
I nodded. His hands came to rest on my hips, and he lifted me off the chair. I wrapped my legs around him, and he carried me to the bedroom. I'd always imagined it on the kitchen table, or the desk at the garage, but a bed was good, too. Everything I needed was there. His shirt off quick, his arms cool with rain, and his chest sticky with sweat. I ran my hands over him and found a long, puckered scar that split the skin over his ribs. Something they had done to him in prison. I was eager to rub my tits against his, to show him mine were finally bigger. His hands were all over me, my hands everywhere else, his mouth laughing, even while he tried to kiss every part of me.
"God damn, these are some boots. How do you get 'em off?" he said.
Slowly. He gave up on unlacing when I slid my feet over his shoulders. His tongue felt good, going into where I was already wet for him. I'd been wet there for him for 7 years. His tongue was good, but not enough.
Pulling him to me, I found less belly to slip my hand past to reach his belt. Orion. The same buckle. The one I knew how to open, and he was in my hand. We could go fast now. He shoved his pants down only as far as we needed. That was how much he wanted me. He wasn't even going to take his boots off. He was so heavy my breath caught in my chest. That was pleasure, being pinned under him, where the air was thin. His cock was as hot as I remembered pressed between my legs. We could move time. Go back to that day. Undo 7 years. I opened my eyes to let him into me everywhere. That first moment, when he pushed against me, hardness against softness, was wonderful. The next moment, when he pushed into me, burning pressure and a tearing pain. It hurt more than I thought it would. Kellen was in me everywhere, inside my nerves. He moaned against my ear. "Oh, Wavy, I love you all the way." I pressed my face into his neck and held on, not breathing, thinking the pain would stop, the way it had when he put his fingers into me. I waited for it to go to burning pleasure, because it couldn't go on being unbearable. But it did. The pain cauterized my throat. I thought I might choke until the seal broke open, let out the sob I'd been keeping in. Kellen stopped. I knew he was looking at me, but I couldn't look back.
"Are you okay?" he said.
I nodded, but the tears I'd been holding back escaped. He jerked out of me, as painful as the going in.
"Oh, Jesus, Wavy. You waited for me?"
"Who else? Who else?" I said.
"Oh, shit. I'm sorry. I didn't think you'd waited for me. I never thought... After all that mess, I never thought you'd want me. You didn't come to my parole hearings, and I figured I'd ruined everything."
He was pulling away from me, but I dug in, my nails into his shoulders, my heels into his thighs. "Hold on tight. Don't let go."
I learned that from him. "I'm hurting you, though, and we shouldn't be doing this. You don't under..."
"Yes." I held him tighter, reached between us, found him sticky and still hard. He groaned when I pressed him into me. I only had to guide him there, and he stopped arguing. My stomach clenched and my legs shook when he sank into me. Kellen stopped again. I clawed at his back.
"I don't want to hurt you," he said.
"All the way." He started again, slowly, and as much as it hurt, I could see how eventually it would stop hurting. The next time, and the time after. Given enough time, there would be burning pleasure where my softness and his hardness met. In the end, he was pounding into me, panting, saying my name. I was lying on the tracks under a train I was in love with. To not cry, I sank my teeth into his chest. I was a vampire, and he had invited me in. He moaned, and for a moment all of his weight was on me. Between my legs was an expanse of pain, but my lungs burned with pleasure, breathing him in. After, his eyes were full of me. I'd imagined he would have so many things to say, but he only lay beside me and looked at me. He was thinking of other ways for me to be his. The ring was on my finger, and I waited for him to see it and remember the one way I already belonged to him.
"Wavy, what are we doing? What am I supposed to do?"
"You love me?" Hearing him say it was like stolen food, to stuff into my mouth when no one was looking. If he said it 100 times, I would ask him to say it again.
"I love you. I love you with my whole heart."
He took my hand, pressed it to his chest, and saw the ring. The front door opened, click, swoosh, and filled his eyes with other things than me. Anxiety, obligation, guilt.
"Jesse, are you here?"
A woman's voice, then a puff of air. Surprise. I hadn't just invaded Kellen. I'd invaded his home. As the woman crossed the kitchen floor, he stood and pulled up his pants. I stayed where he left me on the bed. We were that way when the woman walked in.
"I'm sorry, Beth."
Kellen fastened his pants while she watched. Orion's belt buckled again.
always someone to walk in on us. Do you love her? I said. He didn't make me wait for the answer. No. Beth's mouth twisted, angry and hurt, but she didn't say, liar. Kellen loved me. Only me. I stood up naked in my boots, something hot running down the inside of my leg. I wasn't embarrassed. I didn't care what anyone but Kellen thought.
Who the hell are you?
Beth said. Wavy. As soon as I said it, I knew he hadn't told the woman about me. She didn't even know who I was.
9. Kellen. The way her shoulders stiffened, I knew what it looked like. There I was, living with some woman who didn't even know about Wavy. All I'd meant to do was protect her. It didn't seem fair to say her name to anybody. You fucking pedophile, Beth said. You said it was a mistake. One time, you piece of shit. That's what gets you off? Little girls? I ought to call the cops. I swear. How old is she?
21,
Wavy said. In a couple months, she would be. But seeing her naked in broad daylight for only the second time, I didn't blame Beth for thinking the worst. Wavy was almost as small as she'd been at 13. She was all long legs and narrow in the hips. Her tits were perfect, but not even big enough to fill my mouth, let alone my hands. She hadn't hardly grown at all. Did it make me a pervert that I still thought she was the most beautiful thing I'd ever seen? Did it make me less of a pervert that 20 and 13 looked the same on her? When I had her in my arms, none of that mattered. Like hell you're 21, Beth sneered. Let me give you some advice, little girl. This is his thing. Whatever he told you, he doesn't love you. He just wants your little hairless twat. Wavy laughed. I almost did, too, except Beth glared hard enough to stop me. This is her. Wavy's the girl I went up for, I said. You did 6 years for her? God, how old was she, you creep? She doesn't look old enough to get a driver's license now. You're so goddamn stupid, Jesse. You want to ruin your life, go ahead. But don't think I'll lie to your parole officer for you. Get out.
Beth went back into the kitchen, and I pulled my duffel bag out of the closet and shoved clothes into it, with Wavy watching me.
Get dressed, sweetheart, I said. Yeah, get dressed, you crazy little bitch.
Beth walked back into the bedroom and tossed Wavy's clothes on the bed.
God damn, my new sheets, too! Wavy started putting on her clothes, but she did it like a backward strip show, smiling at me while she pulled her panties up.
No cops this time, she said.
I couldn't even manage a smile to answer that, because maybe the cops weren't going to show up, but Beth stood there in the doorway glaring at us. Get out, and I want your key, she said. While Wavy buttoned up her dress, I took the apartment key off my ring. After I gave it to Beth, Wavy and I went down the stairs and out into the street. Where's your car parked? I said.
My roommate dropped me off.
Her voice just about killed me. Grown up, but still quiet. And happy, the way I'd dreamed about. When she took my hand, I let her. We walked down the block to my truck, swinging our hands between us. She smiled at me, sure everything was going to be okay when I knew it wasn't. I held her hand until I had to let go to toss my duffel in the back and open the door for her.
1969,
she said as she stepped up on the running board. I didn't have no secrets from her. She knew exactly why I was driving that truck. For love. For good luck. Because that was the year she was born. Sitting in the truck, holding her hand again, I thought about all the things I wanted to tell her. I'd spent all those years in a cell thinking about talking to her, but now there was only one thing I needed to say to her. Wavy, I can't see you. I'm breaking the conditions of my parole right now, just sitting next to you, talking to you. I can't have any contact with you. She looked at me hard, not even asking a question. Pissed off and hurt, and I didn't blame her. I deserved that look, but she could be as mad at me as she wanted. It didn't change a damn thing. Tell me where to take you, and I'll drop you off, and that has to be that. I can't see you again. Do you understand? After that, she wouldn't look at me, and I couldn't look away. Probably it'd be the last time I got to see her. I'd thought that before when I was arrested, so seeing her one more time was a gift. I would have counted the last hour as a gift, too, except this was how it was going to end. It should have been our wedding night, and instead it was just goodbye. She sat up straight, her shoulders square, looking out the windshield. Her hair was cut short, with little curls teasing at her bare neck, like that birthday night when she'd worn it up.
"My deposition," she said.
"Yeah. I read your deposition. You were brave to do that. To keep me from getting framed for something a lot worse. They really wanted to pin your mama's murder on me. I sometimes wondered if it could have gone differently. Maybe I could have pled to a lesser charge if she'd told the truth."
"It was a message to say I love you."
She looked at me and there were tears running down her cheeks. I had to look away. "My parole says no contact. I can't see you, talk to you, touch you. I'm not supposed to be within 100 feet of you."
"You are in me."
I was skidding on loose gravel, about to wreck my life again. Wreck hers again. "Wavy, you know I love you."
"Beth."
"No. Beth ain't nobody to me. We can't do this. I can't do this. I'm always gonna love you, but they won't ever let me have contact with you. Because of what I did to you." For once, I was all out of words, and that was scary as hell. Wavy nodded. I thought she was ready to say something, but she opened the door and stepped out. I scrambled out of the cab and stopped her before she crossed the street. "Let me take you home," I said. It was dangerous, but I thought I could know where she lived and be strong enough not to go see her. She caught my wrist and turned my arm to where there was blank space on the inside. I'd always planned to get her name tattooed there after we got married. Standing there in the street with traffic going by, she reached into her purse and took out a magic marker. She wrote 3 numbers on my arm, the first part of a phone number. "Do you remember that, Wavy? Me writing on your arm when I wrecked the bike?" Stupid thing to ask. After all that time, she'd come there and still wanted me. She remembered everything. Before she could write the rest of the number, I pulled away from her. The marker left a long black stripe down my arm. "I can't," I said. "You know I can't. My parole says no contact." She let go of me and crossed the street. Didn't even put her marker away. Just tossed it on the ground and kept walking. She didn't stop when I called her name. So I went after her and caught her by the arm. "No, you cannot walk around down here. It's not safe. This neighborhood is full of ex-cons and sex offenders, folks worse than me." She jerked her arm away from me, but I grabbed her wrist tight enough she couldn't get loose. For a full minute, we glared at each other, her trying to pull her arm back and me squeezing it hard enough to feel the bones in her wrist. "I'm not messing around, Wavy. Now tell me where to take you."
"The college library," she said.
It was a 15-minute drive over to the university, but we didn't say a word on the way there. As soon as I came to a stop in the library parking lot, Wavy opened the door and swung her legs out. "Wait, wait," I said. With 1 foot on the ground, 1 foot on the running board, she looked back at me. "I'm sorry. I love you." Wavy slammed the door right in the middle of what I was trying to say. Maybe I hadn't seen her in 7 years, but I still understood her. She might as well have written liar on the dash of my truck. Seeing her walk across the parking lot toward the library's front doors, I knew it had to be over. But I couldn't believe that was how it ended. I wanted to take back everything I'd said. More than I wanted anything else. Being with Wavy would mean going back to prison, because her aunt would find out eventually. But I wondered how long we could have together before I got caught. Long enough to make another 4 years bearable. Or just long enough to mess up her life again.
10.
Renee.
I went to the library with the best intentions, but by the time I got there, the rain had stopped and the sun had come out. The sun and half a dozen shirtless college guys playing frisbee in the grass by the library steps. Instead of going inside, I sat outside and read one of my sources for my essay. That's what I was doing when Wavy walked up. I let the book on my lap fall closed and lost my place.
What happened?
I said. He finally fucked me.
Finally?
Finally. Wavy, the chronic masturbator, was a virgin? All along I assumed they'd done it, maybe a lot, before they got caught. I'd been so eager to see it as this beautiful romance that I was willing to overlook Kellen having sex with little 13-year-old Wavy. But there she stood, freshly deflowered and looking devastated. Her eyes were red from crying, and she was holding her left arm across her body like it hurt. Her wrist looked swollen.
"Well, looks like he did a bang-up job of it," I said to make her laugh, but her face was empty.
"Why are you here? Where's Kellen?"
"Gone. It's over."
She used the heel of her right hand to wipe her eyes. I wished I could put my arm around her shoulders and make her feel safe. Seeing her that way was awful.
"Over? What do you mean it's over? I know you love him, but what kind of asshole screws you and then dumps you?
Fuck him. You don't need him."
I stuffed my book into my bag and stood up to lead Wavy to my car. I unlocked the passenger side first so Wavy could get in, but as I was walking around to the driver's side, Kellen's truck rolled to a stop behind my car and boxed it in. He got out of the cab and came around the end of it. Up close, he was a lot bigger than I expected. Not as fat, but taller and more muscular. Built like a bulldozer. Instead of the shaggy hair and the 70s sideburns, he had a crew cut. That picture on Wavy's nightstand had frozen him in my mind at my age, but he was at least 30.
Over my ass.
Wavy jumped out of the car and ran to him. Hugging and kissing commenced. As much as I wanted to eavesdrop, I got in the car and settled for watching them in the rearview mirror. Seeing them together as the sun went down and the stars came out, my heart did a little leap of joy. I wanted a fairy tale ending for Wavy, because if she could find happiness, there would be hope for me too.
11. Wavy.
Kellen's hands were shaking, so I squeezed them harder in mine to tell him it was okay. We hadn't said anything, but he was there. The evening star. That was the first thing he said. I looked up at it, felt him watching me. Not just watching me, but drinking me up.
"You told me before, but I forgot. It's not really a star, is it? It's one of the planets, right?"
"Venus," I said.
"Where I am, there's too much light from the city to see the stars. I want to go out and look at the stars with you. I missed that so much." "I missed you."
He kissed me before I could say, "Cassiopeia." When he let me breathe again, I said, "Come home with me. Renee and I have an apartment down in Norman." He closed his eyes, squeezed them tight.
"I can't. It's across state lines. I can't leave the state without my parole officer's say-so."
I kissed him again, thinking we had time to sort that stuff out. We had all the time in the world now that he was free. It turned out we had too much time. Only a few seconds for me to lift my hand, longing to remind him, to have him kiss my ring the way he used to. A few seconds more for Kellen's eyes to go wet, for his lips to tremble. He didn't kiss the ring. He let go of me. And from the way he leaned against the side of the truck,
I knew he was having a hard time standing up. I leaned my head into his chest and held on. Held him up.
Oh, God damn it. I can't be with you. If I break parole, they'll send me back to do the rest of my sentence. If I could be with you after, I'd do those 4 years in a heartbeat. But I go back, and they'll parole me with the same conditions. And it's not just my parole. You know, I ruined my whole life. I'm going to be on the sex offender registry for the next 15 years. Have to put my conviction on every job application I fill out. Have to ask every landlord how far is the nearest school.
I was selfish to wish for you, I said. All I'd ever thought about was how much I wanted him. Needed him. I never thought of what it would mean for him.
You're not selfish, but you're better off without me. I made nothing but trouble for you.
I shook my head against his chest.
It's true. You were too young and I messed things up for you. It's like your aunt said. You weren't even 14 really when I raped you.
I reached up and clamped my hand over his mouth hard enough that I felt his teeth through his lips. It wasn't nice and I didn't care. I wanted to shove those words back down his throat. He pulled my hand away, and his soft eyes said everything was broken. I'd broken him. You didn't rape me, I said.
Okay. Okay, but listen to me. I already ruined my life. I don't want to ruin yours.
It's not ruined. I wanted that to be true, but I couldn't imagine what 6 years in prison would be like. 4 years I'd been Aunt Brenda's prisoner, but even when I promised not to sneak out, I went on doing it. That's why it's called sneaking. Kellen had spent 6 years in a cell. 6 years among people who hurt him. 6 years without the stars. Looking into his eyes, I knew he would stay with me. He was waiting for me to give him the look that meant, stay. He wanted me to say, stay. It had been so long since I had the ring resized that I had to spit on my finger to get it off. When it came loose, I put it in his hand. No more prison. You're free, I said. 12. Renee. When Wavy opened the passenger door, I thought she was coming to tell me what she and Kellen were doing. Instead, she got in the car and slammed the door. What's up? I said. She didn't say a word, just sat there in the dark. Are we leaving?
Yes.
Her voice was raw from crying. Had he dumped her twice in one day? I started the car and put it in reverse, but Kellen's truck was still behind me. Jackass. I waited for him to move, but he wasn't even in the cab. I couldn't see him at all. Will you tell him to move his truck? I said.
I can't.
First time I ever heard Wavy admit she couldn't do something. Fine. I will. I put the car in park and got out. Whatever I thought I was going to find when I walked around the truck, it wasn't Kellen down on his knees. I couldn't tell if he was crying or heaving. Had she gotten her revenge? Dumped him back? I know if I'd been in Wavy's shoes, I would have been salting the earth of that relationship. Could you move so I can back out? He made this choking noise, but he braced a hand against the side of his truck and got to his feet. I could only guess what she'd said to him, because he looked destroyed. It took him a while. But he wiped his face on his shirt sleeve and sort of pulled himself together.
You her roommate? He said.
Yes. I swear for a second I thought he wanted to shake my hand, but he was trying to give me something. When I didn't reach for it, he opened his hand. It was her engagement ring.
Oh, yes. She dumped him. Will you give her this? He said.
No offense, but no. You give it to her if you want her to have it.
No way was I getting in the middle of that.
He nodded and walked around to the passenger side of my car. Wavy wasn't having any of it. He tried to open her door, but it was locked.
God damn it, Wavy. Please, will you listen to me?
He went on talking in this low, pleading voice, but the only word I could make out was her name.
I couldn't hear whether she answered him, but if she did, it wasn't nice. He came stomping back to the truck and jerked open the driver's side door. For about 2 seconds, I was relieved, thinking he was going to leave. Then he slammed the door closed and kicked it. The violence of it shocked a squeak out of me. He took 2 steps toward me and I took 2 steps back. I was about to panic when the Frisbee guys came running toward us.
"Hey, is everything okay?" the tallest one said.
"Please, will you just take it?" Kellen said.
"I don't think she wants whatever it is you want to give her."
"Why don't you just walk away, pal?" another Frisbee guy said.
"Why don't you fuck off?" Kellen said.
The Frisbee guys had a conference, and one of them took off running toward the library.
When Kellen took a step toward me, the tall guy said,
"Dude, my buddy is going to get campus security. I'm just trying to give her this."
Kellen held the ring up so the Frisbee guys could see it.
"I don't care, dude. You need to go."
There was shouting up on the library steps, and then several people started across the lawn toward us.
"Fucking fuck."
Kellen turned around and kicked his door again, twice, hard enough to leave a dent the size of his enormous boot.
"Okay, look," I said.
At that point, I was willing to take the ring, just to make Kellen go away, because he was scaring the shit out of me. Before I could, Wavy got out of my car and came around the truck to Kellen's side. "He's leaving," Wavy said to the Frisbee guys.
"I'm not leaving," Kellen said.
"You can't get arrested." She held out her hand and he put the ring in it, folding her fingers over it. He held her hand like that until she pulled it back. Kellen and I both seemed to think there would be something more, but Wavy walked away and got back in my car. The Frisbee guy came running up, and a few steps behind him was a campus cop.
"Sir, why don't you get in your car and let this lady back out?" the cop said.
Finally, Kellen did. For part of the drive out of town, we were behind his truck, but when I turned for the highway, he went on straight. I let out a long sigh. "I know you love him, but what a psycho," I said. "Did he used to do that kind of thing, kicking in the door like that?"
"Sometimes," Wavy said.
She sounded exhausted.
"And your wrist? Did he do that too? Rough you up?"
"He didn't mean to."
"Right. They never mean to, do they?" I said.
We passed under the last row of streetlights before the highway went to 4 lanes. I looked over at Wavy, who still had her hand in a fist around the ring.
"Seriously, he's a crazy fucking asshole."
"Don't, Renee."
The first time she'd ever said my name. Because she asked, I didn't say the rest of what I thought, but my rose-colored glasses had been shattered. Kellen wasn't the love of her life. He was a dumb brute with greasy hands and a cheap haircut. A guy with no education and a bad temper. Big enough to kick a dent in the side of his truck, and stupid enough to do it too. After almost an hour of total silence, Wavy started making this soft hiccuping noise that I realized was her crying. She had been leaning her head against the window, but she slowly folded over until her head was resting on her knees. The crying kept getting louder and louder, until it was hard to listen to. You can look up the word keening in the dictionary, but you don't know what it means until you hear somebody having her heart ripped out. It went on and on. I was terrified. I didn't think you could cry like that without hurting yourself. I drove faster. 10, then 15 miles over the speed limit. Then I did something I never imagined doing. I reached out and laid my hand on Wavy's back. I wanted to comfort her, and myself, but feeling her whole body shake made me feel worse, so I put my hand back on the steering wheel. The last 10 miles I cried too. I went all in for histrionic romance crap, but I'd never loved any guy the way she loved him. My heartbreaks lasted a month. I'd eat too much and mope around crying, but I always found a new guy. I was as fickle as those Cosmo quizzes said I was. I couldn't imagine being with one guy as long as she'd been with him. I couldn't imagine what it would be like losing him. When I pulled into the driveway at our apartment, I was almost hysterical. I tried to get her out of the car, but she curled up into a ball and totally ignored me. Even as small as she was, there was no way I could carry her up to our apartment. For half a second, I thought about driving on to her aunt's house, but just for half a second. That would be traitorous.
taking her to a woman she didn't even trust to look at a picture of Kellen. I left Wavy in the car and ran up to the apartment, trying to think of who I could call to help. Her cousin Amy. But she was at the University of Nebraska. Even if she left right then, she wouldn't be there until the morning, and it was finals week. I was standing in the kitchen, holding the phone and crying, trying to think of who to call, when I saw the napkin with Darren's phone number. I dialed and he answered. I don't think I made any sense, but when I stopped blubbering, he said, "I can be there in 10 minutes. It was more like 5 minutes before he rolled into the parking lot in an open Jeep. Watching him jog toward me where I stood next to my car, I could tell I'd gotten him out of bed. He was wearing sweatpants, a Marine Corps t-shirt, and tennis shoes with no socks. For a while we stood there, looking at Wavy curled up in the front seat. "Are you sure she doesn't need to go to the hospital?" he said. "She's not sick. She just got her heart broken." Wavy was so far gone. She didn't even care that Darren picked her up and carried her to our apartment. He laid her down on her neatly made virginal twin bed, and she went on sobbing, that godforsaken ring clutched in her hand. We left her there and went into the kitchen, where Darren made us both giant glasses of rum and coke. While we drank, I told him the whole awful thing as far as I knew it. Mostly because I couldn't stand being alone with knowing it, but also because Darren was a good listener. We had another drink, and then another, and talked about everything. My nightmare year in a sorority. His 8 years in the Marines. How my father thought I was too stupid to get anything but an MRS degree. How his father was in prison when he was a kid. That was why Darren joined the Marines right out of high school. When we went to check on Wavy later, she'd finally worn herself out crying. She was asleep with her arm flung out, the ring next to her hand. I turned off the light and closed the door, but then Darren and I were standing in the hallway outside my open bedroom door. "Do you want to stay?" I said. "I could stay on the couch if you think you'll need me." "Maybe I need you in here." I felt so stupid because he looked down, kind of embarrassed. Had I completely misinterpreted his interest in me? "It's not that I don't want to, because I really would, but in my book this falls under the heading of taking advantage," he said. He slept on the couch, in case I needed him. I thought about going out to the living room and seducing him in the safety of darkness. All I did was think about it, though, before I fell asleep. I woke up to the sound of typing. At first I assumed it must be morning, because what kind of crazy person types a letter in the wee dark hours? But it was only 4 o'clock. Under normal circumstances I would have yelled at Wavy, but considering everything that had happened, I let it go. Just as I was starting to get used to the peckety peck of Wavy typing, this enormous crash brought me bolt upright in bed. "Wavy!" I shouted, but she didn't answer. I heard a man's voice in the living room, so I jumped out of bed and ran out there. Darren stood at our open front door in his bare feet. He pointed out into the hall. "Wavy just, she came through here carrying a typewriter. I asked if she was..." Another crash came from the stairwell. We ran out in the hallway and I yelled Wavy's name, but she didn't answer. Unless the sound of metal meeting wood that echoed up the stairs was her response. I hurried down the stairs with Darren right behind me. Wavy's typewriter was lying at the foot of the stairs, broken into pieces. She stood over it, and right as I got to her, she kicked it and sent the biggest chunk of it skidding across the floor. "Holy shit," I said. "Are you okay?" "No." Without saying anything else, she ran down the next flight of stairs, and then I heard the front door to the house slam open and closed. One of the second-floor tenants opened her door and looked out at me. "Sorry about that. I'll just clean this up," I said.
"What the hell was that?"
Darren said.
"I don't know."
He and I picked up most of the typewriter parts and carried them upstairs. I didn't know what else to do with them, so we took them into Wavy's bedroom where I could see what had made the crash that woke me up. Wavy had apparently thrown her typewriter across the room and put a big dent in the wall.
"I don't think you're going to get your deposit back."
Darren dumped a pile of typewriter debris onto Wavy's desk and picked up the torn halves of a sheet of paper. It must have been the letter Wavy was working on, the one that made her murder her typewriter,
It was addressed to the lawyer who oversaw her trust.
Dear Mr. Osher, I'm writing to request that you draft a letter on my behalf to be sent from your office to Jesse Joe Barfoot, Jr., as the conditions of his parole prohibit any contact with me. I'd like you to communicate with him regarding a 1956 Harley-Davidson motorcycle, which has been in my possession since 1983. It is currently located in the garage of my guardian, Mrs. Brenda Newling. I would like Mr. Barfoot to take possession of the vehicle at his earliest convenience. It is my wish to sign the motorcycle over to him as a gift, as it belongs to me personally and is not included in my trust. As it is unlikely that Mr. Barfoot will be able to receive the motorcycle directly from Mrs. Brenda Newling, I will of course pay for any expense related to the delivery of the item into his possession. Enclosed, please find the name of a motorcycle shop in Geringer which can arrange transportation, as well as the signed title, and Mr. Barfoot's current address. Sincere regards, Miss Wavana Quinn.
I didn't even think about what time it was. To be honest, I didn't care. I took Wavy's address book out of her desk and called her cousin Amy. She picked up, sounding groggy and belligerent, but once I identified myself, she got quiet.
Is everything... Is Wavy okay?
She whispered. No, I would not say that Wavy is okay.
What happened?
What happened is she just found out that Kellen's been paroled. And under the conditions of his parole, he can't have any contact with her, I said.
I know. He can't be within 100 feet of her. Also, no phone contact or letters. She knows that.
She did not know that. Do you think she would have gone to see him if she'd known it could get him thrown back in jail?
Wavy kept a lot of secrets from me, but there was no way she'd have gone to see Kellen knowing that.
It certainly explained why their happy reunion had crashed and burned.
She went to see him? Why?
Amy said. Why? Because she loves him. And how did you know he'd been paroled when Wavy didn't even know?
My mom told me. Like a year ago when he was paroled.
Your mom? How does she know? He got paroled last year? Wavy didn't even know he'd been paroled until yesterday.
I knew I was screeching, but I wanted to reach through the phone and slap Amy until she said something that made sense.
Darren sat down on the couch next to me with a concerned look on his face. I was so glad he was getting to see me at my screamiest.
How could she not know? They sent a letter to say he was up for parole. Oh, crap.
Amy went totally silent, so I knew she was figuring out what I'd just realized.
The letters went to my mom's house and she never told Wavy.
But you knew, and you never thought to mention that in any of your letters?
I said. My opinion of Kellen changed about every 5 minutes, but Wavy loved him, and her aunt had no right to keep that kind of secret from her. Neither did Amy. We don't write those kinds of letters. She writes to me about NASA launches and medieval urban planning. Besides, we don't talk about Kellen in my family. We just don't, okay? You don't know what it was like when all of that happened.
I thought you were on her side.
I am. But Mom thinks she's doing the right thing, Amy said. What would you do if you thought somebody molested your 13-year-old niece?
She's not 13 anymore, and you don't know what this is doing to her. She thought they were going to be together. She still loves him.
Normally, I would have been crying by that point, but I was so full of righteous anger, so when Amy started sniveling into the phone, I did not feel sympathetic. Is she okay? Amy said.
No. She spent about 5 hours crying her heart out, and then she went tearing out of here at 4 a.m., going God knows where. I don't know where she is or when she's coming home. I guess if you hear from her, let me know.
I didn't wait to hear what Amy said. I just hung up. Do you want me to go look for her? Darren said. He squeezed my hand, which surprised me, because I wasn't sure at what point we'd started holding hands. No, if she's mobile, she'll be all right. You wouldn't believe some of the crazy shit she's survived. Do you want me to leave, so you can get some sleep? I'm too awake to go back to sleep, I said. Darren's hair was musk from sleeping on the couch, and that early in the morning his beard stubble was coming in. I'd thought he was so baby-faced when I met him, but without the close shave, he looked kind of rugged. When I scooted closer,
He put his arm around me.
Yeah, I don't think I could sleep either, he said.
Thinking about how close I'd come to sacrificing my dignity on the altar of